nothing like talking about all these crazy kids, right?
All these kids these days.
Kids.
Boy, I can't believe Bobby started the episode off by calling them kids. I'm telling SR on you.
Oh, here we go.
Looking at you, Colonel Schindler. Kids. Now, hey, everybody, welcome back to the Ones Ready podcast. You're back in the team room, and we have Tech Sergeant Robert Wesson with us. Appreciate you joining us.
Awesome to be here, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. So you are a special operations recruiter and out here in Vegas. So that's how we kind of got linked up. We've done a couple events together. Actually, I think one event. So I don't want to give credit where credit is not due in my case. So
yeah, you just, you lied by 100%. You lied by a factor of a full one.
That's chief.
That's what I do. That's where I'm comfortable with in that lying,
lying area.
Yeah. So, dude, you obviously haven't always been a recruiter. So what did you do beforehand?
So before I was a recruiter, I worked in heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and refrigeration. So HVAC. Did that for about 9 years. I was stationed in Misawa, Japan, my first 2 years before going to Davis-Monthan Air Force Base for about 7 years. And then from there, I got DSD'd, pick up for recruiting. Here I am.
So you weren't one of the voluntold ones. You actually volunteered to do it.
Oh, no, I was voluntold 100%.
Oh, okay.
No, I was forced. DSD is code for you have to do this.
Yeah, voluntold. DSD is they told me that I had to enter my information into this list.
Yeah.
What? Golly.
This is going well.
It's going real well.
It's going.
Well, anyway, so you've been doing recruiting for how long now?
Oh, man, about 4.5 years.
Okay. I thought this was your first stint, but you were an enlisted accessions recruiter before becoming a special operations recruiter?
Yep. I was tier one out in Tyler, Texas. Did that for 3 years and then came here in 2022, started SW recruiting.
Nice. Okay. And with the whole HVAC thing, were you just trying to get out of that or were you just like onto something else? Because, I mean, that's that right there, especially being in a place like DM, I can't speak for Misawa, but a place like Davis-Monthan out in Tucson, I mean, you had to have been busy. Because I know the boys here at Nellis, they are busy.
Yeah, I had a blast, man. I was definitely busy for the whole time I was there. Man, doing that stuff was, like I said, yeah, it kept me busy. And then, you know, being there for 7 years, it like your superintendent's kind of like, hey, man, you've been here for a while. Let's try and do something to help you grow, you know. Let's change it up a little bit. And I definitely got comfortable being in Tucson. I loved it there. I did not want to leave. And they're like, yeah, man, we got time to spread your wings and fly, do something else, and hopefully grow as a, you know, as an airman and a supervisor and just learn something different. So, you know, I didn't want to do it at first. And, you know, whenever you do something that you don't want to do, it helps you grow.
Yeah, your comfort zone. I'm laughing about it because I've had those same conversations. Listen, you really got to develop you, and you need, you know, a chance to opportunities to succeed, and just really.
Oh man, you are chiefing so hard right now.
I'm going to throw up.
I'm going to provide you an opportunity for growth. This is going to be good for your career.
So just
really think about
it's
you know
for you.
Getting outside of your comfort zone.
Really, like opening up that aperture. You know, just really.
There has never been a conversation that the other person has liked that has had any of those phrases in it.
It's the other person on the other side of it's really like, really, you think so, huh? No, anyone, dude, I know exactly what you're doing to me right now.
I'm going to walk out of this office and talk to the movers. You're going to go back to your job after this office, or after this conversation. This is terrible for me.
I'm really on the losing end of this one, aren't I?
Real bad.
Jeez. Yeah. Well, good. So what was your first, you said Tyler, Texas?
Yep. Tyler Tech out in East Texas. So kind of out in the boonies a little bit.
So what's the difference really then right off the bat between an enlisted accessions recruiter and a special operations recruiter?
Enlisted accessions recruiting, you're dealing more with the whole Air Force, Space Force realm, I guess. Special warfare is more just dedicated to the six career fields, you know, that you yourselves have served in. Pararescue, combat controller, TACP, special recon, SEER, and EOD. So that's all we really focus on in special warfare. And going back to EA, like I said, it's, we focus on more like all the career fields within Air Force, Space Force, more processing, getting them through maps, and then just getting them ready to go, getting them ready to ship. And special warfare is more of like the development aspect.
Okay.
How much did you need to learn about special warfare when you got over on our side of the fence? Because I think it's easy for us to be like, oh, recruiting is recruiting is recruiting. But it seems like y'all have to, like, you know, there's a fair bit of education that goes into y'all so that you can recruit more effectively for us.
It was a lot. You know, there's a lot that goes into your career fields, and it's a totally different lifestyle and a totally different just kind of like whatever you want to call it kind of thing.
You can call it whatever you want.
You can call it whatever you want. Yeah, I had a bunch of slurs like teed up in my toolbox there.
Luckily, I've had good developers that kind of introduced me into, at least helped me along with y'all, and kind of what you are, what you do. Tony Tarando is my developer, and I think he's been well known by a lot of people. Kind of being a hard ass, and just he'll tell you how it is. You know, he'll tell you how it is.
Thanks, Tony.
But he's also like he's there for you if you're willing to put in the work and do it. You know, for you and for what you're trying to achieve, like he's all about it, and just kind of being around him and seeing what he says and just seeing how he interacts with all the candidates, it's pretty eye opening. And like I said, it's a different world compared to just a regular Air Force job. Y'all are doing something that nobody else, you know, the 1% of the 1%, right? So you got to have a different attitude, a different mindset.
Come on, the HVAC homies. I'm pretty sure like they're a pretty rough bunch. You know, I mean, y'all are like crawling around sweating like crazy. Like they're, you know, I imagine there's a fair bit of, you know, dip and bad words and all those other types of things that flow across the career fields.
You know, rippets and spool canes, all that kind of stuff. So
shout out to those orange rippets, man. Like 700 milligrams of caffeine. Fantastic. Have you seen
through all the deployments, you know?
Absolutely.
I've only seen them once or twice in the States, and that's about it. I don't know.
What I know, right? It's never the same. It's never the same.
So coming in off of EA recruiting, and as you go through this process to learn about, you know, special warfare and all the career fields, what was the most interesting thing for you when you were like going through that education process, or something surprising that you learned?
Oh man, honestly, it's a lot.
It's like PJs really are pretty. That's what I figured out.
They really are pretty, yeah.
They really are. It really is a thing.
I guess it's learning the whole scope of what everybody does. You know, like, I guess the one career field that nobody really knows a lot about is Special Recon, right? And I'm like, I recently learned, I guess, a little bit more. You know, they're kind of more like the, one of you is SR, right? Kind of like more like the spy, I guess, kind of concept, right? when I first came into it, I'm like, oh, yeah, they're a trained sniper. And, you know, in those top secret clearance. Cool stuff, right? Without really actually knowing kind of what all they actually do, and you still really don't know everything that they actually do to the full extent, just like most of these career fields. But learning a little bit more about SR and just kind of doing more like behind the scenes kind of stuff. You don't know they're there till they're there, and you say, you slip up, you say something you're not supposed to say, that kind of thing. Like that was kind of one of the coolest things just to hear about those career fields.
Yeah. Well, fun fact is nobody knows what all of the career fields do all the time,
right?
It's
exactly.
I mean, we just talk about being secretive more than anybody else. That's all it is.
100%. My favorite my favorite part too is, like, you know, we every once in a while, like, we have, like, I don't know why, but like tech P's are real angry. I used to think that security forces was the angriest career field. They're not. Tech P's 100% angriest, like most grumpy career field of all time. But even then, they'll be like, you know, we put a post up the other day and it was like how SR actually works with the other mission sets. And the angry tech P boys came out. They were like, oh, I guess SR just does everything now. Like, they do personnel recovery now. And we're like, well, I mean, yeah, they do. Like, PJs work in global access and support precision strike as well. And combat controllers do PR and they also do global access because we work in teams. And it was funny. Like, I started to read it and I started to get like mad. Like, you know, that Key and Peele sketch where they're like reading angry text messages. But then I was like, oh no,
it's go? Just,
yeah, exactly. Do you want to go? No, I have no problem, bro. Yeah, but it was just funny because the misconceptions are out there. You really don't know the scope and how every career field really does do, you know, a whole bunch of different missions, and they have a wide set of capabilities, essentially. So, yeah.
I mean, if you're a tech guy having to deploy with the Army, wouldn't you be mad all the time too?
For legal reasons, I am not commenting on any other career fields or anybody other than myself. Thank you very much. I get enough heat on the interwebs, my dude.
It's love. Aaron gets love. We promise. So what was the, you know, like, so you get into it. What was the first question that you got that you've heard the most since then? You know, like you're, you know, doing special warfare. You're like, okay, like it's not going to be that bad. And I know everything that there is to know, but like everybody has that one question.
Man, the biggest question is always like, what do I got to do to make it through ANS? And I'm like, man, you got to focus on getting through SWIC first. That's like, you can't focus on ANS. Like, it's baby steps. You know, you got to crawl, walk, run kind of thing. So I'm always like, look, you need to pass the IFT first, because you can't pass the IFT, you can't even go there.
Yeah, you can't get into the program unless you can actually pass the entrance exam to get there.
Everybody's worried about further on down the road, and nobody's just thinking about, like, crap, I got to pass the IFT first.
Yeah, and we get that a lot, too. People will talk about, you know, getting past dive school or whatever. We're like, hey, how about you study for the ASVAB? How about you get a hold of a special operations recruiter? So that's where I'll start with you. We have a whole bunch of questions that we put out on the Instagram. We have a whole, like, I mean, pages and pages of these. Some are good, and to be honest with you, some are terrible, and you guys should do better out there listening to us right now. However, we're going to start kind of from the very beginning. How do people, if they want to, you know, they're starting to do their research and they're getting excited about getting into Aspect War, how do they find you? What's step one for finding a special operations recruiter?
Well, the biggest thing is to go to airforce.com. You can always go in there, put in your information, and then you should have the option to choose kind of what you want to do. If your interest is in special warfare, then it'll direct you to the nearest special warfare recruiter. It's pretty much that easy. You can either do that, or we do have the Aim High app. If you download Air Force Aim High, go in there, put in information. Like, it has everything, anything and everything about all our career fields, Air Force, Space Force, Special Warfare. Find what you're looking for. If you're interested, it'll give you the option to just make that selection, and then it'll direct you right to one of us.
We get our own app that's actually called Aim Center Mass instead of.
I think you could.
All right, but you know what? He just put that in the note. Let's go ahead and develop Aim Center Mass, and we're gonna get there.
I'm sure that'll cost us a cool $20,000.
Cool $20,000, right away. App development? I don't know. Who knows?
So it spends you all the money, anyways, right? So, I mean,
oh yeah,
that is true.
Is that what everybody's saying?
Yeah.
All the money we're getting off of these YouTube views.
We're on the streets. So once they decide that they're going to get a hold of a special operations recruiter, once they go to airforce.com or use the Aim High app, soon to be the Aim Center map app, and they do get a hold of you, right? How do you prefer the candidate to go through the talking process? I just answered a question yesterday. Somebody was like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about getting into this, and I don't want to waste the recruiter's time, but I'm not actually like committed to this thing 100%. Should I talk to a recruiter now? Should I wait until I'm ready to actually like start the process? What, from your like recruiting point of view, what is the best way for a candidate to engage with you in the early stages?
So once they submit the information, we will get a direct notification saying this person has reached out, put in their information. So we will normally reach out to them. We have 5 business days, put that out there, 5 business days to reach back out to anybody that sends us notification. If they're unsure, like, that's our job, just to talk to them, give them as much information as possible, give them as many resources as possible, and be like, look, if this is what you want to do, look up these resources. Here's everything that I know. I have a bunch of information on my computer that I normally send them through email. So that way they can do the research and see, okay, this is what you need to do step-by-step process. This is how, if you decide you want to do special warfare, like, we have workouts every month. You need to make sure that you're starting to train. I'll send them a training regimen that our T3I developers will send out. Like, hey, you guys need to start doing this stuff so you can start getting ready. Because once you come to an IFT, it's zero to hero, right? You need to start going right now. And if you're not ready for it and we don't see any kind of progression, then it's going to be like, dang. Sorry, bud.
Nice. I'm here for it. There are some questions about medical stuff. We shy away from medical stuff just because it's so complex. Are there any list of just immediate right off the rip, like no-go sort of stuff? We'll get into the whole like switch over to Genesis and, you know, having a lifetime of issues that we have to look at now. But really, yeah. Are there any medical issues that you can generally say, hey, no matter how hard it is and, you know, without this waiver, you're not going to get in?
So right off the bat, I mean, asthma, ADD, ADHD, that's kind of the biggest thing. Any kind of like autism or Asperger's kind of stuff like that. Like, that's really kind of the biggest thing that I see that's just like, sorry, it's not happening. Now that's if you currently have it. Now, if you've had like childhood asthma, something from like a long or history or ADHD or when you were a child or whatever, but you don't have, you're not prescribed it or any kind of medication or diagnosed with it currently, then that's something we can normally waiver and get you in the Air Force that way. Normally. Now, I'm not a doctor, so it depends on the CMO and the Surgeon General. So my best advice is, unless the recruiter tells you no, get all the paperwork that you can, send it up, and let the doctor say no.
Don't stop yourself before at least submitting. Just like, oh, well, I took this medication as a kid, like, guess I'm not going to do it. Just submit it and then go through the waiver if need be, for sure. No, that's good advice. Someone
on TikTok told me that I couldn't, so why? I'm not going to try.
Well, Trent, we're the official unofficial podcast for the Air Force, so...
Thank you.
Yeah.
Official, I mean, unofficial podcast. Shout out. Nobody else can say that.
Yeah.
You know why? Because nobody else listens to the other podcasts that the Air Force puts out.
There's other podcasts?
Exactly. Exactly.
There's another kind of disqualifying thing too that not everybody deals with, but I know that we have fielded some of the questions, and that is the justice system kind of questions. And I know that there's a difference, and I'm probably going to mess up the vocabulary here, but there's a difference between dismissed and closed, right? Is that the two differentiating?
Not guilty.
Okay, yeah, not guilty and like, or dismissed, I think is what it was, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like dismissed and like found not guilty. So normally if you're dismissed, then there's still probably something that you had to do along with that. So if you ever, you got charged with something, but it was dismissed, but they're like, oh, hey, well, you still got to do community service or you got to pay this fine. Like that still counts as that charge. So unless you were found not guilty, that's the only way that it's like, okay, we still got to document it, say it was on there, but it'll say not guilty instead. And that's when it's not really going to count towards you.
Now, if somebody just has dismissal,
me too.
Is that a complete disqualification or is that still like a waiver process and we've got to go through because it depends on what the charge was?
Yeah, so it all depends on it. So we have different categories. So category 1 through 5, category being the murder, all that kind of fun stuff, right? So depending on what category it is will depend on the chance of you getting a waiver. Now, normally 3 through 1 is going to be where you're going to need a waiver. 4 through 5, normally you don't see too many waivers. It depends on how much violations you have racked up, how much of a hoodlum are you, kind of thing. So, you know,
there's a good portion of us that if we weren't doing this, we would have a substantial
record. Right?
Yeah.
Right. 100%. Yeah. There's a lot of hood rat shit going on with your friends.
You know. So yeah. But those, it's like 1 through 3, that's when you're only getting the waiver. 4 through 5, you know, unless you like see you accumulate a couple of them pretty fast. In which case, if you're getting a waiver for a 4 through 5, the commander's going to be like, I don't know about this guy.
Does that also translate to any kind of financial stuff? I know that, like, you know, it used to be that if you had a bounce check, whenever checks were really a thing, like you couldn't do, like that was a big no-no.
Okay,
if you
had ever.
Yeah, I know.
What's a check? I'm over here Googling. I'm like, well, what's a check?
What's cursive?
What's a cursive?
What's a cursive?
So is there any kind of financial things that people have got to worry about?
Normally if you have anything, if you're 23 years or older, or if you've been married or married, that's when we're going to normally have to run a credit check. In some cases, you may require a financial eligibility determination or an FED. So if you had any kind of history of repossessions or anything in collection or missed any payments, or if you have a debt to income ratio of over 40%, then you may require one. But the only difference is sometimes for some of these other ones, if you need to make payments on them, then all we really have to write up is just a letter stating like, okay, yeah, I missed these payments or this happened or that happened. And this is how I'm going to fix it. Like if you allow me into the Air Force, I'm going to dedicate, you know, my paychecks to these payments. So that way I can make sure that they're all done and then take care of it. And that's it. Like, that's my promise to the Air Force, to get into the Air Force kind of thing. So they'll make a payment plan. We'll forward it up. If the commander says, yep, sure, let's do it, then cool. If not, then you got to try and figure out something else, either consolidate your debt some way or get rid of it some way. So once we're in that credit check, you have 30 days to kind of figure out what you want to do. It's like either A, like, yeah, I can pay this stuff off and I'll be good to go. Show us the receipts. That way we can clear it. Or if you can't, then like I said, we'll have to come up with that payment plan and then get you in the Air Force that way if the commander allows you to.
So again, just like the medical stuff, don't say no to yourself right off the bat. Like, go through the process, and maybe we get you on a get well plan to get you in.
So,
yep. Yeah, exactly. Force you guys and the Air Force to say no.
Yep.
Okay. Switching gears, to kind of the ASVAB, the test that everybody has to take in order to join. I know that there's different scores associated with that, you know, different things, but that kind of, what would be the minimum to get in? For an ASVAB score?
So the minimum to get into the Air Force in general is a 31. Now, are you going to be qualified for a lot of jobs? Possibly not. But regardless, if the dream is to get into the Air Force and you qualify for it, do it. By all means, do it, because it's going to change your life no matter what. Change mine. Mine wasn't a very high score either. Here I am. I'll admit that. Somebody called me out on the other day. Like, it was a school visit. We were doing a classroom presentation. The guy was like, hey, what are y'all's ASVAB scores? And I'm like, the guy's like, well, one of the other guys I was there with, he's like, oh, I scored like a 70 something. And I'm like,
yeah.
First of all, how dare you? How about you? First of all, how about you keep that question to yourself, bud?
Yeah. Let's hold to that boy. Score there.
Personally.
And want to do some push-ups, college boy?
Well, the reason why so you kind of already teed me up for the follow-on then is that, what are the rules for taking it again? Because I know that there are some stipulations that, yeah, you can take it again after a certain amount of time, but then after that second one, you've got to wait and all that kind of stuff.
Yep. So you have 30 days to wait in between, up to 3 tries. So once you hit that third try and it just didn't go your way, then you have to wait 6 months. So the longer it takes for you to pass, the longer you have to wait. I mean, kind of same thing that goes into kind of development with these candidates. Like, if you're not passing, probably the first or second time, because you take the practice test initially, right? Kind of see where you're at. Like, oh, they scored a 15. Like, okay, go home and study. Let's have you take a practice test again in a couple weeks. If you come out and you take the ASVAB and you just bomb it, and you come out again and you bomb it the second time, like, what have you been doing in a month? You know?
Like, yeah.
Are you sitting at home? Like, I'm gonna think about it. You know, they get stuck on their phone on Instagram, scrolling through One's Ready podcast for some, you know.
If you're gonna be on Instagram, it might as well be our page. You know, like, no big deal.
Then they would crush the ASVAB though if they're on our page.
It's not gonna help you smarter. Yeah, it might make you dumber. I think, you know, especially listening to me. If it's one where I'm heavily focused, like, sorry.
That's a tangent. But yeah, you know, that's really the biggest thing is just seeing some of the. I had a couple when I was doing my tier one that just could not pass it. I don't know what was going on. I don't know what they're doing at home. I understand you got a home life, but man, if you want to do something, you got to dedicate some time to it. So that was my biggest thing. I always told them that, and whether they listen or not, obviously proof's in the pudding, right?
Are you saying that sacrifice will be required to make it into this community regardless?
Not at all.
Great question. Great question, Trent.
Yes,
1,000%. 1,000%. If you're not taking time management, also as a recruiter, you learn about time management day one. So doing something like this, you know, especially being a civilian, not in the Air Force yet, if you're not dedicating time, obviously, like I said, you have work. If you have kids or a wife or a spouse, whoever it is at home, or whatever else you got to take care of, like, priority, right? But if you want to do this, you got to take the time and you have to train. You got to work out. We're not telling you to go do the stuff in your off time, because they're trying to blow smoke up your ass and be like, oh, they're going to come back and they're going to pass. It's going to happen. It's just hands down. Like, you got to put time in. You got to do it if this is what you want to do. Because when you actually get in, say you get through SWIC, say you get through ANS, you get selected, like, it doesn't stop. It's 1,000%. Like, you know, y'all guys, it's excellence at all times. Like, if anything less is not acceptable. So you always got to give you
a 3-month vacation after that, so you can do whatever you want to do and there relax.
That's not true. I'm going to Google that. I don't think that's right.
Unofficial part of the podcast, not the.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what if I'm like 30 something years old and I walk in? Will they even consider me if, you know, I'm not in my early 20s anymore?
Man, you heard we just raised our age up to 42.
Yeah, but for reals, you know, like, I know that's what you just told me, but if I'm 34, are you actually going to consider me walking in the front door? Because this seems to be a sticking point.
Yeah. Have you known anybody that's been over the age of 18 that's ever made it through? Even if you did, what did they have to do differently? Are there different age groups when you're going through selection? What about older candidates? Do you think that they should even be allowed to live, or should we shoot them in the head?
That's a question for ANS cadre right there.
Well, they're going to say yes. They hate all students equally. There's no age limits for them. They have a lot of hate.
Yeah. Well, I know for me, like, the youngest I've worked is 17. Like I said, the oldest I'm working currently is 36. So it really is just kind of a mindset, you know, and it doesn't favor towards being older or younger. It's just like, how much do you want? So, if you're, like I said, if you're able to put in the work and just dedicate that time to do it, no matter what your age is, you can do it. Nobody's going to look at you differently as long as you're a good teammate and you work with each other well and you're not a douchebag. It's not that hard.
Maybe a little bit of a D-bag.
Maybe a little bit of a D-bag.
Yeah.
But,
it takes all kinds.
Oh, yeah.
You leave the door open for my people. Okay. They're my people. But like, say I'm 30 something, and I take supplements as well. This is my other favorite question. Am I still going to be allowed to take supplements once I enter the pipeline? And is it a good idea to stay on the sup train, you know, during my development process and all that other stuff?
Definitely not. Nope. 100% natural. Try and figure it out, man, because you can't. Yeah, you're not going to get it while you're there. You're going to be getting your regular food and maybe some protein bars. That's about the closest thing to supplements you'll probably get, honestly. So yeah, I would definitely start changing up your diet, regular foods, normal foods, doing it that way. Cause I mean, once you get out and you say, if you did get selected and you're further along in your career, like, go for it. You know, but yeah, doing that initial process, nope, it's what you get.
Yeah. And that's the other people don't understand that either. They're like, oh, well, I should be able to take something normal like creatine or some, you know, sort of rehydration, whatever, you know, yada, yada, yada. Listen. Your body is going to be put into such a compromised situation over and over and over again. They eliminate all that stuff out there so that they don't have to worry about this. I don't know how many times I saw in our pipeline, we'd have a student go down for something. We'd be doing an event and somebody would go down and be like, oh, well, I took some pre-workout, or I was taking, you know, at the time for like Rip Fuel, or I was taking, you know, whatever it is that you were taking. And you had no idea that you were going to be put through such stress that it would affect you in a certain way. So the answer on supplements is no, you're not allowed to take anything other than prescribed throughout your pipeline. The realistic answer is that, yes, of course, students are going to try to get around the rules by taking stuff. But you put yourself at risk. I know. Shocker, right? Realistically, if you think that you were okay taking that risk, and you know, we've been talking about it the entire time with Bobby here, but the sacrifice, the time that you need to do from the preparation of the ASVAB to going through the development programs to getting to all of those development sessions and getting to BMT, if you want to go ahead and roll the dice on how your body is going to react in a situation you've never put it in before with extra supplements on board, go ahead. But that's an easy way to find you in a different career field if that's what you want to do.
Peaches used to be 6'2", and look what happened. He took supplements.
Lost an entire foot.
I lost an entire foot. I lost a fourth of my height.
Supplements.
Just due to supplements. This is a peach. This is a peach on sups. Don't let it be you. So, Bobby, one of the other questions that we got on the Instagrams was, hey, so is there any way for me to guarantee my AFSC if I decide to leave the pipeline through performance, through quitting, or whatever else. So can you talk a little bit about how they choose an AFSE if the pipeline doesn't work out?
So the pipeline doesn't work out, they're definitely going to look off of your preference list. So whenever you go through the recruiting process, you've qualified for the Air Force, you're going to create a list. We're going to give you the job list and be like, hey, you know, what do you want to do in the Air Force? 1 out of 10. Like, this is your plan B, right? If something doesn't happen, shit's the fan, like you're saying. They're going to look at that list. They're also going to look at your history. Like, what was your job history? And maybe, so like, if somebody did, for instance, this is one of my guys, pavement construction. So if they're a construction worker, if it doesn't work out in SWCC or whatever happens, then they'll reclass you into more than likely one of those career fields. Because you have that history, why not put you in something that you already have some kind of knowledge in, right? So they'll look off of that. They'll also have you create a list too. Normally, I'd say about 6 to 10 jobs as well. Just make that list, put what you want to do in there. It's going to be based on availability at that point as well. So they're going to look and see what was your history. Is it available? If not, then the worst case scenario is needs of the Air Force. So what do we need the most? What's something? They'll still talk to you and still trying to get your preference too. But if you're just one of those hard asses, like, I don't know how I feel about that one, then they're just like, yeah, we're just going to give this guy something because he don't know what he wants.
Well, and people need to understand, it's like a group of like 3 people that do this. And they have like 2 lists. They have like the people I need to get new jobs to today list and what they want. And then the list of available jobs that was updated that morning. And they're like, okay, this is what you want. It's not on the list. This is what you want. It's not on the list. And like, it's just the way it is. Like, they don't have time to be like, hey, Airman former Cone, like, I know you really want this job. We're just going to pay you for the next 2.5 years and wait for that job to come open. Like, that's just unrealistic.
Yep. You gotta think about it first. Hey, you are sold on the Air Force first, right? So anything that happens at that point, like, hey, you're still in the Air Force, you're still getting paid, Uncle Sam, so 2.5 days a month, all the goods, right?
100%. We're going to hit some quick hitters from these bad boys, so hopefully we'll be able to like knock some of these questions out. When should you talk to a recruiter as a high schooler?
So 17 years of age, junior in high school, that's the soonest that we're allowed to start processing individuals. So if you're interested, I would say still at least reach out to them when you're 17. If you're 1,000% committed and there's no doubt in your mind that you are not going to be like, you know what? Never mind. Come senior year when you're about to graduate and it's like, yeah, I changed my mind. I'm gonna go to college and go do this other fun stuff. Like, one of my friends is going, so here we go. Then go ahead and start at 17. Excuse me. But I would probably say if you're gonna start, especially for like a special warfare candidate, closer to this time frame, honestly, like December, January. So that way we can start developing you and getting you ready to go. So that way when it comes time to, you know, June, like, you should be superstar, honestly.
Ready, right?
Yeah, you should be knocking out, you know, 20 pull-ups, 100 push-ups, sit-ups, run like a 7-minute mile and a half, all that fun stuff, right? Not realistically, right?
Yeah, 7-minute mile and a half is fast, homie. You said that, I was like, yeesh.
Yeah,
it's been a while. Been a while since I've been able to run that. Yeah.
That is fast, homie.
Like maybe you know, sub 9:30.
Yeah,
run time would be more realistic. So yeah, around that time from December, January, talk to us, start getting you developed, ready to go. If you're looking regular Air Force, some of these recruiters, they do try to get you ready maybe before the holidays just to get you in the building entry program and start getting you ready to go. But sometimes they will be like, hey, let's wait until January so that way we can start the process then. You know, Genesis and MEPS, whole different story. I'm sure we'll touch on that a little bit, but that does kind of prolong the process depending on what your background is. So starting in January, getting you ready to go, hopefully you can be through everything and then good to go by June. So I would say around this time frame in January is when I would start reaching out to a recruiter. Being a high schooler, being a senior in high school, honestly, would probably be the best time. Junior, you know, freshman through junior year, have fun, do your thing, don't get hurt. You don't want those medical records.
Don't do anything stupid.
Don't do anything stupid to jeopardize your
trouble
future.
Only.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Like, you see a lot of people, man, I went and stole something because I, you know, wanted it, and you get caught, and now you got a background history, and it's like, man,
it's not stealing if I want it more than they want it, right?
Thanks.
Then I went to a guidance counselor and told them I was anxious and had ADHD and told them, like, self-diagnosed all these things and got it entered in.
Oh, man, that's the biggest thing right there that I've seen is a lot of candidates are, like, they have a history of ADD or ADHD or something, and they're like, well, my mom thought I just had way too much energy as a kid, and I played video games all the time, so I'm like, there it is. You just sat in your basement playing video games all day instead of going out and running around doing stuff. Like, maybe you don't have ADHD. Maybe you're just cooped up and you need to go out there and do something, you know, kind of thing. So they went and got them diagnosed with ADD or ADHD, so I get put on medication, and they're just a zombie all day, you know? Like, that's one of the biggest things I see that really disqualifies a lot of people. I mean,
yeah, this is my opinion, not obviously no stats, but I think we're going to see a swing the opposite direction. I think our generation and maybe younger were over-medicated, and I think thanks to some events that happened in the recent years, people are becoming a little bit more skeptical and realizing that maybe we need to medicate people less. But who am I? I don't know.
Nature is medication. Just get out into nature. Touch the grass.
Yeah. Go touch grass, nerds.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in Arizona, or not. I'm in Las Vegas, so there's no grass.
Go touch rocks, nerd.
I got bushes.
Nice. That's not too bad. That desert sage is doing good. Since we're already sort of on the topic, we will talk a little bit about Genesis. So for those of you that are not tracking, MHA Genesis, is it MHA? Is that the
MHS?
Or MHS?
Yeah.
Military Health System or something?
It's Genesis, so whatever.
Yeah, so it's a system, right? So Genesis is a medical system that they use to clear you through the Air Force, and it's been causing problems. Can you talk about the problems that Genesis has been causing?
Makes everything a lot longer.
Okay.
I mean, for some people that just don't have a history, like, it still is a little bit faster, even so. There are a couple that still get through pretty fast. The only difference for it is really just we have to send up medical records but we have to send up a package regardless, no matter if you had no medical history whatsoever or you do have medical history. So you mark your 2807, which is your medical pre-screen. We send it up. If there was nothing on there, doctor will see it, like, all right, authorize the process. They're going to pull your past 7 years, your pharmacy records, see if there's anything on there they need to be concerned about. If there is, then like, oh, well, we need medical records for this, and this. If, like I said, they're not on there, then they'll say authorized process, good to go. But then if they do, if they find something, you need to submit medical records, you need to go get it, and you're like, crap, I forgot about that. Or that was, you know, 20 years ago. I have no idea. Then it's kind of like just you really got to rely on them to hopefully know who the doctor was, where it was at, and hopefully be able to get their medical records or at least get a letter, something stating that, you know, this happened. Or if they're young enough, you can have parents write something saying this is what happened, this is where they're at. But yeah, if you have a medical history, you know, broken bones or you had a surgery or whatever, and then you have a stack that's like this big, trying to put in somebody, and hopefully these candidates understand that it's going to take a little bit longer, just because especially a surgery, that's automatically going to go to Surgeon General. Any kind of ADD or ADHD, anything like that, dyslexia, it's going to go to Surgeon General. They have to approve it, and that's normally a longer process. So on top of Genesis taking a little bit longer and then going to Surgeon General, sometimes it could take a couple months, unfortunately. Right.
And, you know, bottom line here for all those candidates is, number one, you should know intimately before you start this process what's in your medical records. You should understand these things and talk to your recruiter. Mm-hmm. And then not get super poo-poo face about it when you come back. You're like, oh, I didn't know I was going to have to wait 6 months because I have, you know, ADHD medication and a surgery that I didn't disclose and a diagnosis of asthma as a child and all these other things. So number one, you should have those things on lock. That's part of the process, is knowing what's in your medical records and making sure you understand the process completely before you engage in it. And then number two, expectation management. Like Genesis, it's a military system. I don't know what to tell you other than military system sucks. Like, name one good thing that the government does efficiently. Like, when was the last time that you went to the DMV and you were like, oh man, this place was just humming? You know, the best time I've ever had at the DMV, the privately contracted DMVs that are fighting for the dollars to make their system the best. Those are the best ones. Those are the most efficient.
I don't know if you knew, but Genesis is only like 30% operational.
So, right. Okay, so that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. Right. That's exactly. Right. So
like you can kind of get around it sometimes depending on which medical insurance you have.
Nice. hit us up in the DMs for more of that. You know, don't put it, everybody's going to need to look at the YouTube now because he put it in air quotes, which I did. All right. So, you know, Genesis is what Genesis is. Bottom line here, know exactly what's in your medical records before you engage in this process. If there's a diagnosis or there's, we would call them hanging chads. If there are things that are out there that you know are going to require some explanation, get that done beforehand. And it'll make the process a lot easier. Question on Guard and Reserve folks, if they're interested in special warfare jobs in the Guard and Reserve, which recruiters should they go to?
Guard and Reserve recruiters. They're going to be the ones that's going to help you out. From what I've heard, I don't know a whole lot about it. From what I've heard, it's pretty much reliable on slots. You got to have a slot available wherever it's at. So if there's not a slot, then kind of SOL. I think they have just tryouts as well at different areas. I know there's one down in Tucson at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base for like pararescue. So it's kind of a different process compared to active duty.
Okay. And let's see, can you get asthma? This is a specific asthma question. Can you get asthma waived to go into special operations?
So if you currently have asthma and you are currently on medication, no. You need to be off of medication for asthma for a minimum of 2 years before the Surgeon General will confidently say yes. If you have been off your asthma medication for at least a year, 50-50, maybe. But if you have to not be diagnosed with it, you have to not be on medication for at least 2 years for us to get a confident yes, you can join the Air Force.
Okay, so I mean, but there's wait times associated with that. So how about any kind of like LASIX or PRK or anything like that?
Yeah, you can do that. You can get them with those surgeries. So it's just something we'll have to submit a form, or we'll give you a form and you'll take it to your optometrist. They'll be the ones that'll write down the information and then bring it back to us, and we'll submit it as part of your pre-screen just to show that A, you've had the surgery, and B, that your vision is now, you know, in these parameters.
But is there a wait time associated? I know that there's not. There used to be kind of like a general rule of thumb is, hey, plan 12 months because you have to be completely healed up and all that kind of stuff. It's 6 months now?
Yep. So six months. Yep. So as long as you've had your surgery, you wait 6 months just to make sure there's nothing happened. You're still good to go. Everything's fine. Then 6 months is only the wait time.
Dang. That's a big jump. Good. That's good. All right. So if I'm I'm somebody in high school or whatever, and I'm in development, how long can I actually stay in development before you guys kind of kick me to the curb?
So I kind of stated it earlier. We want to see progression. So if you come out to the first development session and I see like you can't do any pull-ups, you do like 20 push-ups and 20 sit-ups, and you just throw up on the run, it's like, okay. We got to polish this turd here. And then they come back the next time, you know, the first time you see them, you give them a development plan, like, hey, this is what you need to do. Start training, put in that work, come back in, you know, say 2 or 3 weeks. Let's see how you're done. If they come back and you see, okay, they're able to do like 1 or 2 pull-ups, their push-ups have gone up to 30, or you know, sit-ups have gone up to 40. Like, all right. So this dude's doing what we asked him to do. Cool. As long as we're seeing progression, I'm going to let you stay in. Okay, I just don't want to see you regress. If you come out the first time and you're really put out, and then the second time you come out and you just regress for some reason, like if you're just because, like, oh, and then I ask you about it and you're shit with me, like, oh, I just, you know, I've had this going on or this going on. It's like, bye.
Bye, Felicia.
I like it. Meritocracy. And I'm going to plug the channel here. You guys have zero excuse for not knowing exactly how to get to this process like Bobby's talking about. We have an episode with the SWIT coaches that have a pre-BMT accession plan. We are friends with Kevin Edgerton, who puts out all kinds of workout advice and whatever else. We have our own episodes on IFT, CFT, OFT, and the numbers, where we break down not only the tests that you'll have to take, but what we think you should be hitting for your numbers to be successful. We have hours of content on this stuff. So you should just be using the search button and figuring this stuff out. It is unacceptable for you to go in and do, you know, 1 or 2 pull-ups and then be like, well, I didn't know. Like, we have all of the resources out there. We'll put the cards here in the episodes for the episodes that I just mentioned to get you the information that you need, but it's on you to perform.
Yep. T3R also sent out, like I said, a training plan for us. So anybody that is trying to get into it, like, we can send, as long as they get in touch with the special warfare recruiter, we can send them all kinds of training plans to get them ready to go. So as long as they do that, like, it's it should be pretty easy. You're, the only thing is you're not doing what you need to do if you're not coming out and performing.
Yeah, there you go. Accountability, ownership.
Mm-hmm.
One word sayings, motivation, dedication, discipline.
That was my favorite. That was my favorite question is somebody hit the sticker up and they were just like motivation.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
you'll need some.
Okay, cool. Yeah. No, every day. What questions do you have for a special operations recruiter? Motivation. Over to you, Bobby.
Don't be a turd.
Yeah.
Motivation. Stop sucking.
And you heard it here first.
Yeah. You heard it here first. The official unofficial podcast of the United States Air Force. Motivation.
Oh, that's my favorite, too. Somebody comes in with an ego. And like I said, Tony Tarando would say how it is. If you come in and he sees that you got an ego, like you shit don't stink, he's going to knock you down a peg real fast.
Nice.
He started doing pull-ups, and they're like, he wasn't clearing the bar. His chin was up, and he's like, zero, zero, zero. And the guy's like, what?
Well, he's got the credibility too. Like Tony, exactly. he's very unassuming. You know, that's right, Tony. I said it. You're unassuming. You know, like
you know. Smart.
But I mean, the dude has a history of badassery that is, yeah. Well, there you go.
Yeah, you wouldn't know it looking at him, honestly.
No, that's what I'm saying. But that's kind of the. That's kind of our MO as well. Like, you know, honestly, when you see us compared to, or some of us anyway, some of us that are 5'2" on a good day, next to some NSW boys or some ODA or even Rangers, dude, Rangers, some of those are monsters. There's some a lot of skinny boys. Ones too, because they run a lot, but there's some monsters out there. But, okay. So, pinging a recruiter, like we do get some messages that say, hey, you know, I've pinged my recruiter, I've contacted him, I've shot him email, text, and they're not getting back to me. I just can't get a hold of them. And then, okay, like how long has it been? Well, dude, I pinged him last night at 10 PM. Huh? Like, well, dude, it's, you know, I mean, you know, so what's a reasonable amount of time, and what would you recommend for folks, that, you know, are getting a little impatient, or maybe they haven't heard from their recruiter?
So 5 business days is what we have to reach back out or at least respond to a text message. Our commander sent. So AFRIS, right? So that's our tracking system for individuals interested in the Air Force. If not, our commander's like, so you got, you know, 24 business hours to respond to somebody that, you know, texts you or calls you, one of those kind of things. So that way they at least know, like, hey, I got your message. I'm either doing this or doing that. Wait until, you know, if you message me, you know, attend something on a Friday, I'm not going to respond. You're waiting until Monday, bud. I got a life too. You know, I feel like it's something that a lot of these candidates don't understand is like, I got a life, you know, I'm not just working 24/7, 365. I'm not going to wake up when you call me at 2 AM. Like you're drunk and just had a come to Jesus moment. Like I want to run the Air Force. That's not happening.
Please tell me that's happened. A
true story.
I know. Has that
happened? No, I wish it was.
Oh, man. Hey, bro, I wish you was thinking about the Air Force so much, bro.
It's my number one story for us.
Oh, man. That's so great.
Should have said it was true.
I know. Nobody would have called you on it. It's okay. We say dumb stuff on here all the time. The only person who gets called out is me. As long as I tee the comment up for you, it's fine.
There you go. But, yeah, you know, that's... within 5 business days, you should hear something from us no matter what. The only time that maybe not is if, like, we're on leave. You know, if we're spending time with our family, don't try and do things for ourselves. We normally won't answer our phones, or we'll have it, should have it off, or have, like, a voicemail set up, like, hey, I'm on leave between these dates and these dates. If you're getting this, then just wait till that time. I'll get your voicemail. I'll respond once I get back from leave. Or send an email, send a text, so that way you get all three. We're going to see it eventually. But still, worst case scenario, if you're not able to get a hold of a special warfare recruiter, talk to an EA recruiter. There's probably one in your area. And we work directly with them regardless. So get in touch with them. And then they have our phone number. They'll be like, hey, you know, normally we'll respond to them probably maybe a little bit faster sometimes. And then they'll reach back out to us and we'll get in touch.
Well, and it's hard to find y'all on like social media, right? Like on Instagram, it's super hard to find Special Warfare recruiters.
If you just type in the word recruiting in your search bar, 700 accounts pop up.
Do they use them? That's the question.
Yeah. Well, there are some fakies out there for sure.
True that. There's definitely some fakies out there.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, like, you have the official, like, your squadron's recruiting page, right? Or Instagram page and all these other resources. I'm just saying, with like a little bit of effort, you can probably get a hold of somebody that can answer your questions and maybe like figure out why that specific recruiter didn't drop everything and, you know, run out of his house during dinner time to come find you to get you into the Air Force because you're the most special person on this planet.
Oh, yeah. I've had plenty of people from different states. It's like, hey, I can't get a hold of this recruiter. You're the first one that answered. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, I got you, man. What do you need? And then I'll normally forward it to the other recruiter.
They probably have a question about like college, you know, like, hey, should I go to college first? You know, because I'm planning on becoming SR, doing some other work, and then going to an agency before I've even taken an IFT. So, like, should I go to college first? Will you accept enlisted recruits if they have degrees? Is it normal? You know, all the other questions that are super awesome.
Man, good question. Yeah, that's funny. Oh. I would hope that's not an actual question. But yeah, you know, if you got a degree, you can get in the Air Force no matter what. I mean, if you decide to go enlisted, then that's the easier route from what I've seen. So anybody that's trying to go officer, first off, if you're trying to do TACPO, you know, or Stoa Crow, you got to pass an IFT first. I have not had one person pass to be a Stoa Crow yet. One that had very high hopes of doing it and dropped the ball. Say the least.
Wow, really? You haven't had one yet? The initial test?
Did not pass for Stoa Crow. Nope.
Are we talking phase two?
This is just initial. Like somebody said, yeah, I'm interested in wanting to do it. Like they haven't started paperwork or nothing. Like
that's wild. So they're like, I want to be a special tactics officer or a combat rescue officer. And you're like, tight. The entrance exam is the IFT, and you've had nobody pass that.
Okay, so that was a lie.
Got him.
Just remembered. But he was somebody that's in the Air Force, so he was trying to reclass into it. So that's the only difference. It did take him a little bit, but he ended up passing. But yeah, nobody from civilian trying to do this has passed.
That's rowdy. Let that be a lesson to you, everybody out there.
A leader of this group of individuals that are a little bit rowdy. And but like I'm not gonna just crush my IFT coming out the gate. That's like expectations crazy. Wise, like you're supposed to be better than all the sweaties that you're working with.
1,000%.
So, all right. Well, say I'm one of those guys in my late 20s, and I have a spouse and kids. When do I get to see my family? Because that's what I'm gonna ask you 8 million times before I ship out. Is how often do I get to see my family, and when do I get to see them during the pipeline?
So during the pipeline, I know there are certain phases where you do get to see them. So like obviously after graduation from basic training, you'll get to see them during a graduation ceremony. While you're SWIC, I think it's going to be a little bit less than what you normally would, if at all, honestly. And then when you're going through the pipeline, you make it through ANS, you'll obviously get to see them kind of after that. And then from there, it's going to be when they come visit you, not if. When they come visit you.
What's another
weekend? Yeah. Yeah, exactly. When? Their family, I would hope they'd come see you when you're going through that training. So like on the weekends for sure. And then there's a certain phase of training in the pipeline where I believe they do get to relocate to, I believe, Lackland, since you're there for a certain amount of time and be there with them until you get your actual assignment.
Yeah, so for pararescue, it's down at Lackland, and it's when you're entering into the MP3 program. So I think you have to get through like dive, and once you're through dive and then ready for MP3. And then for the controllers and the SR cats, that's going to be at Hurlburt Field when you're getting ready for STTS and the finishing part of your pipeline there. So we just verified that recently. So that's when your families will actually get to join you. Up until then, you're still going to have time. Like we're getting close to the winter break, which is known as Exodus inside the pipeline and inside of all real technical training. But it's basically 2 weeks off where you're not going to be expected to be there. Everybody goes home. And then when you get back, you are going to get smoked. So happy new year. They're going to fight. The cadre know that you have.
Turkey.
Exactly. The cadre know that you have not been working out and you've been doing dumb stuff. your entire break. So they are going to smoke the living crap out of you as soon as you get back, and you're going to complain about it. And the cadre are going to laugh because they've been taking time off too, and everybody's trying to figure it out. It's a whole fun thing. So just get
up. But what's awesome, the quitting, the level of quitting that happens after the holidays, because, dude, people have been, they've been enjoying themselves. They've been enjoying the family time. They've been kind of taking a break. They realize, like, hey man, this whole being comfortable thing isn't too bad. Like, I kind of like this.
Right?
And then, you know, that first time in the pool, you know, getting some air taken away from you, or, you know, grass and gorilla drills or whatever it is. You're like, dude, this sucks.
Yeah. I can see
that first time going back after a nice long break. It's just the worst. You're like, oh, I'm cold. I'm wet. I'm hungry. I forgot how bad this sucks.
Hopefully nobody is looking at this right now, or will be looking at this and be like, man, I'm in for it.
I hope they are. Yeah. I hope they are. I hope it's they hear this part of the podcast when it sucks and they're like, wow, they were right. This really does suck.
Yeah.
I think that's all
okay
that we had for the
question. And that's
questions.
Okay to know that it sucks, right? That's okay. Yeah, it sucks. Just don't quit.
How much experience, Bobby, do you have with cross trainees? Like, how much do you know about the cross trainee process? And like, really just bare basics, like, who should they talk to first to kind of start this process?
So they need to speak with a career counselor on every base. They should have one. So they need to talk to them, get the process started. They literally do everything for you. The only thing that we do is conduct the IFT. So our developer, our teacher, our developer is going to be the one that will put you through a workout. You'll do the IFT. You get the IFT worksheet if you pass, and then boom, put that in your package and then submit it up to be reviewed by CFM and give it the go or no go.
Got it. And there was one question about, you know, how can my prior service packet, how can I make it stand out? We've talked about it a million times. Follow the directions to a T, put it all in order. If it says page one is supposed to be form X and page two is supposed to be form Y, put form X as page one and form Y as page two, and make sure that everything is completed and that you've done everything. Because when it hits, you know, Trent's desk or the other MFM's desk and they look at it and it's out of order and it's not completed properly and you have things that are missing, that immediately, you know, makes them very mad at you. The narrative, and Trent, I'll turn it over to you. The narrative has never been a make or break in the history of the, we get so many questions about how do I make this narrative the best that it can possibly be. Trent, what's your advice on the narrative?
Keep it simple. I mean, I'm not, or entertaining. Okay, so that I'm not saying that I've ever like printed one of these out and we've laughed in the office about some of the things that people write in these. But like, I don't need to hear about the time when you were 3 years old and, you know, and you had a
skiing accident. You knew then you were going to be a pararescue man.
Yeah, I met a firefighter or whatever and blah, blah, blah. That's what started my lifelong obsession with service. And yeah,
love it.
I made a calendar featuring small dogs and that made me want to be shelves.
Well, and especially when like you like read this like hyper moto like narrative, and then like you look at their PT scores and you're like, these don't match at all.
Right.
Yeah, there it is.
I just knew that I would quit or die. And then you look and it's got like 7 pull-ups. You're like, wait a second.
Quit or die.
Wait a second.
I would die before I quit.
Well, and then really, I'll go to you would Valhalla. Not die before you ran a 12-minute mile and a half, my guy.
I really got into the Spartan mindset, you know what I mean?
To Valhalla, brother.
That's right. On my shield.
Oh, my God.
On my shield. I'm coming back with my shield on it. Who's going to curry the goats?
That's what the real question is. Who is going to curry the goats?
Who is going to
curry
the goats?
Because I'm hungry. So that's random.
He's always hungry.
But there's one question that I actually got a phone call about this the other day, and then we'll kind of wrap up. But one of them is college, in terms of, and I know we kind of already hit college beforehand, but what would you say to folks that are kind of in the middle of college and they're having a crisis of, golly, I want to friggin' go in, but I'm also in college right now, but I'm getting student loans out right now. Like, what would you say? And I know that there's probably not an Air Force answer for you, because I know what I would say. For me, I would say, you know, I would say come in, enlist. That way you're not going into debt, and then get your degree paid for. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you really want to go the STO, TACPO, CRO route or whatever, you can always cross train after a couple of years.
Yeah, so we do have the college loan repayment program. So if anybody does have college loans trying to get in now, they have to be authorized by the Air Force to still pay back. But it's, I believe it's up to $60,000.
Dude, yeah, so it's 60 G's payback?
Yep.
Whoa, that's pretty awesome.
So it's a good bit. So if you have any kind of college loans, private insurance college loans, that's something you apply for right off the bat. See if it qualifies first. If it does, then yeah, Air Force will take care of that for you and then get you in. It was kind of delayed for a little while, but now it's back on. So
okay. And as the only person on this podcast qualified to answer this question, height requirement.
No pressure. Height requirement.
Yeah.
So
there's gotta be one, right?
Yep. So actually, well,
there wasn't obviously back in the day.
We've gotten better. We've gotten smarter with the height requirement.
For the Air Force in general, it's like 4'10" to get into the Air Force. Now, if you're trying to do, my first commander in recruiting, she probably was like a hair above it. Hopefully, she's not.
That's crazy.
This.
I will say for selection, like the common phrase in selection is like selection favors the small guy, right? Real tall, real big, real heavy dudes. Like they usually, if they're that big, that tall, they're usually like freaks of nature. Like a couple guys, you know, we've said his name, Mark Bedell, a couple of these, you know, Kyogi, you know, some of these other guys were huge, but they were also freaks and just absolute monsters. Usually selection favors the smaller, wiry dude. When we talk small, we're talking, you know, 5'7" to 6', in between, you know, 150 to 200 pounds. Exactly. Yeah. Trent is dead in the middle of this. You know, Trent's 5'10", 175. Like he is crushing the middle
cold
ground.
Cold cut there. Steel.
Oh, yeah. He's made out of balsa wood. Just hard.
But you're right. Being taller in the pool is money.
Way money. Better. Right.
But when it comes to crawling through the drainage tubes, I may have an advantage.
Yeah, all of those cows that you have to do repetitively, that you have these longer levers and you got to move this extreme distance compared to the smaller guy. Typically, those bigger dudes, you know, they're a little bit lankier. They're a little bit more prone to injury and some of the lower musculoskeletal stuff. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dude, but when you see some of those really short guys, the first time in the pool with their like jet fins on or whatever they are, and they're like basically going backwards the first time they try to fin, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Real funny.
Love you, Jared.
Well, and the other thing that short guys do is you forget how much fun they are to have on team because you watch them run, and in my head, I always put the like little like ding, 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 so. As they're he's moving their little there. Feetsies.
There he is.
Missed it air, but that's okay. We couldn't hear, but it'll be on the recording.
You'll hear it on the podcast. Just pretend that it was really funny.
Okay, last question, and then we'll close it up. Is what piece of advice would you give to folks that are wanting to come in?
Well, we already touched on it a little bit. Like I said, if you're wanting to do this, you need to be dedicated. You need to be motivated. You need to want this 1,000%. Anything less, it's probably not going to work out for you. Everything that you go through this process is going to be to get you ready. A lot of people are worried, like, oh, just because I passed the IFT doesn't mean I'm going to be ready for SWCC. Like, that's what it's there for, is to get you ready, get you prepared at least for that, get your foot in the door. Basic training and SWCC is going to get you better along the way. So just come ready to go. You get any form of doubt out of your mind that either, you know, like, this is not going to work out or whatever. Like I said, you got to put everything that you have into it and just be coachable. Be coachable. If you're not coachable, it's going to be the hardest thing that you do. And 9 times out of 10, they're probably going to say you're done or you're going to quit or whatever it may do or whatever it may be. So just don't give up. Be coachable. Be durable. Do what you got to do to get ready to go.
Damn. Be coachable. That's a good one. All right. Cool, man. Well, appreciate you joining us. Man, you answered a lot of questions. We took a lot of notes.
Yeah, thanks, Bobby. Appreciate it. Yeah.
No problem, guys.
So any kind of socials you got that you want folks to come visit you on?
I do have Instagram. It should be Las Vegas_Special Warfare. AF_Las Vegas_Special Warfare.
Okay, cool. Either way, we'll tag you.
Super hard to find. If I was a kid in Vegas looking for a recruiter, I would never
find
that.
Super easy. I think I'm the only one, unless my alternate ego is out there somewhere.
Yeah, you do. You have had at least one fake account, but
at least right. one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. That's what we got, guys.
Well, again, thanks for joining us. Everybody out there, don't forget to like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. Leave us a review, especially a funny one. And here's the cool thing is you don't even have to really write it. You could just go to ChatGPT and say, write a review for the Ones Ready podcast, and then you could post it. Like, that's all you got to do. So I'm not picky, really. I'm not picky. And then head over to onesready.com, check out our merch. And then 18 Alpha has merch on there. So does Attack Elite. So get it all there. One-stop shop. All right, we're out here. Later.
Thanks, guys. Later. Have a good one.